And we have quite an episode ahead of us.
Do we?
Welcome, everyone, to Three Truths and a Slide. I'm one of your co-hosts, Aaron Schaefer, and through the magic of parallel worlds, interweb devices, you name it, I'm here with your other co-host, Kristen Froberg. Kristen, how are things sliding?
Excellent, excellent. We got off to such a strong start that I'm excited to see, I'm genuinely excited to see where the season goes. And I was thinking of that song from Moana, like, how far I'll go. And then I was thinking about Jerry's hair, like, how high it will go. And just, you know, cinematic parallels, I believe, is the term for, no. I don't know what I'm talking about, but I'm excited.
Whenever I watch Moana, I also think about Jerry's hair.
Well, whenever I watch anything, I think about Jerry's hair. Like, I watched I actually watched The Departed for the first time recently and was like, why was he not in it?
No, yeah. He would have, like, any of those roles he could have done.
Yeah. I watched Tombs. I've been on a real, my friend called it a dad cinema kick. There's a podcast I like that recaps movies, and I am watching the ones I haven't seen. Tombstone. A dad cinema classic. Why was Jerry O'Connell not in it? Coming to America. You know, I think there could have been a place for Jerry. And Isis just chirped at me. She agrees. Yeah, yeah. So she's been enjoying that with me, and she enjoyed the episode as well. Because in the movie, I've just been detecting an energy from her that there's just not enough Jerry O'Connell in the films. So when we watch Sliders, like, she's feeling, I sense an alignment with her. Like, she's at peace.
Well, we're glad her Jerry chakras are in place.
Oh, yeah.
So our podcast is about the TV show Sliders, which prominently features Jerry O'Connell, who we love talking about. And each episode, I tell Kristen three truths and a lie about the episode we're about to watch. Then we watch it. And then we mull over how bad of a liar I am. So, Kristen, are you ready for the next episode?
I am ready, and you're not a bad liar. You're very, very good at the game.
So we are in season 2, episode 2, titled Love Gods. And this premiered March 8th, 1996. And Kristen, are you ready for the next list?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Jerry is rated grade A status. Rembrandt wears heels and a dress. Wade sings for Jerry's attention. And the professor is better at climbing walls than Rembrandt. So I'll go through that list again. So the first item, Jerry is rated grade A status. Second, Rembrandt wears heels and a dress. Third, Wade sings for Jerry's attention. And last but not least, the professor is better at climbing walls than Rembrandt.
Well, making Rembrandt wear heels and a dress seems like a very 90s thing to happen. I need the first thing on the list to have happened. So it's down to, I'm thinking either 3 or 4 is so, the slide.
So you've narrowed it down to Wade singing for Jerry's attention, and is the professor better at climbing walls than Rembrandt?
And it's really never a matter of, oh, I don't think that happens in the episode. It's which things do I feel must happen in the episode, or at least really want to happen in the episode.
It's a good take.
I don't know. Okay. They do like to make, like, well, I was going to say they like to make jokes about, like, the professor's capabilities, but we've seen him / his iconic stunt double tuck and roll into a moving vehicle. So maybe he, like, leaps over the wall, like, flies over it, soars over it. Like, we don't know. Although, if Rembrandt, okay, I'm going to say it's maybe Wade doesn't sing. Maybe that one's the thing that doesn't happen.
All right. So you predict that the lie is Wade sings for Jerry's attention.
I predict nothing, but I'm playing the game and having a good time with the game.
All right. Well, that's the final answer. So let's roll into the vortex and see what comes out the other side.
Other slide. Yes. Very ready. And we're back. I am I just got off the internet with some friends from the South. I don't know about you, but
oh, yeah, well, let's jump into the list and see if your friends have anything to say about that. So,
are we gonna jump in and people hear our disembodied voices long before they ever see us, like in the beginning of this episode? Well, I mean, yeah, because it's a podcast, but whew, let's get to it.
All right, is Jerry rated grade A status?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Sure is. Does Rembrandt wear heels and a dress?
Yeah, he does, and it didn't age badly at all. We'll talk about that.
And so you guessed, does Wade sing for Jerry's attention?
And I got it.
Shot call! That is the lie. Wade does not sing for his attention.
I got it right, and then what I did was sing A Moment Like This by Kelly Clarkson, because that was my feelings upon... It was like I won American Idol, but it was me for once. One time, Aaron, just one time. Big Doctor Who, Sometimes Everyone Lives energy of me winning the game 1 week. I'll never forget the feeling.
Well, I am Justin Guarini walking off into the sunset.
Oh! I'm so sorry. Did you ever watch the film... The cinema film from Justin to Kelly?
No, I never. I mean, Martin Scorsese was unsure if it was cinema, so I never saw it. What's your review of the movie?
No, it is cinema because it. Well, first of all, I forget where they go. They go somewhere for spring break. That it's like no one goes there for spring break. I honestly could not do it the justice that. Oh, goodness. What's the movie podcast that I really like? Jason Mantzoukas, June Diane Raphael.
How Did This Get Made?
Yeah. Check out How Did This Get Made from Justin to Kelly. I used to own this on DVD. We all make choices in life, but it is cinema. And there were some things about the episode that were cinema, although not everything in the episode was cinema. And then what was that last one?
Is the professor better at climbing walls than Rembrandt?
Just overcome, really, thinking about it all.
All right, so we'll vault over that wall and let's get right to the world recap.
Vault, sail over it, yeah.
Okay, so there's a virus that wiped out most men, and there are breeding areas that only accept, like breeding facilities that only accept the most beautiful and accomplished young women to repopulate the earth. And it is now a quote-unquote arms race to get the most dudes in a country to repopulate each country. So, in Australia was like tucked up, they were far enough away from the poisonous gas so they have the most dudes. So they're now officially a world superpower. So,
which... Things I did not have on the bingo card. Sliders reminding me of the apocalyptic novel that I'm completely drawing a blank on. But like basically it's On the Beach. Spoilers, trigger warning. Give yourself a minute. I'm going to talk about the end of an apocalyptic novel. Everyone still alive on the earth is either in Australia or New Zealand waiting to die from the poisonous mushroom cloud. I actually do really like the book because we've talked about it. I like apocalypse stuff. But literary parallels with like, hey, you know, the people of Australia, they're either not affected or they're not affected quite yet. That was an incredibly dark turn. But well, Aaron, it was actually a little bit of a dark episode when you think about it, wasn't it?
So one thing we can definitely say about this episode is that Don Prestwich and Nicole Yorkin definitely did not contribute to the script on this episode.
No, they did not. No.
If you wondered what a room with a bunch of dudes think about what would happen if the world had very few dudes and just a bunch of women, this is what would come out of that writer's room. So
I would say so. Yeah.
We start. So for some reason, this budget, the budget on this episode was low. I don't know if this is technically considered a bottle episode, but the special effects were quite weak on here because I think that everything was spent on, floating vampires in previous episode. So
as it should be, because that was beautiful.
It really was a sonnet.
It.
Yeah.
When it brings a smile to my face every time I see it in the credits. So, and I will just say, Aaron, you know, we're here to have fun. I didn't think I had a sliding made a difference this week. I am actually realizing I do have a little bit of a sliding made a difference, because there were some similar thoughts I had to the one episode. Was it The Weaker Sex last season? Was that the episode?
Yeah. That was the one written by Don Prestwich and Nicole Yorkin.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think we had a enjoyable time discussing it. I don't know if it was what the weather looked like outside, but I didn't have great feelings about the episode, even though, of course, I always enjoy what the actors are doing. This had some things that I think probably would have, like, maybe legitimately set me off had I watched it, like, around the time we watched that episode. But sliding has made a difference, because as I've continued to just watch the show and appreciate the episodes for what they are and all the really fun things they have to offer, you know, there's little moments here and there that I think we will continue to maybe just draw attention to, because we want, I think, all of our listeners to, you know, we want to be respectful. We want to be informed. I think at the same time, it's like, we're here to have a good time. So I was like, yeah, if you flip this whole situation around, it would just straight up be The Handmaid's Tale. I'm going to go ahead and watch this episode of Sliders and shout with delight at the very small set details, Jerry's voluminous hair, Wade's increasingly good outfits. Let's talk about that. And just the way that Jonathan Rhys-Davies and Clevant Derricks, in particular, everyone, but as always, them in particular, the dialogue that they're given is sometimes just throwaway. We're moving from scene to scene, but they're like, no, I'm doing something here. So, yep, we're going to get into it. We're going to recognize their excellence.
So the ultimate tell in Sliders is if the budget is low on a particular episode, is if the sliding happens off screen. And it's like a watery light. Like if you were to like shine a flashlight on a pool and there's like that like shadow like that illuminates on a wall. If you see that on a wall, that means that their budget's low. And then if they just come stumbling out from behind some wall. So,
or was it that the vampire was too powerful for us last week? Like a lot of what happened was actually very powerful last week. And they need to give us a moment to like take hold of ourselves again. Like just really get it together.
Maybe they blew their budget on Jerry's wig last week. Who knows?
That beautiful, majestic waterfall. It was funny, though. No, because I really liked their arguing as they made their way into the scene. And then we didn't see them for so long that I was like, ooh, are we doing invisibility? We were not doing invisibility. But I enjoyed their arguing with each other as they made their way through the vortex.
So
enjoying them kind of shoving the visual image of them shoving each other aside in the neon colonoscopy.
So this world starts off with some real twists on our regular world. There is a Brooks Sisters store, not Brooks Brothers.
It was then that I knew exactly where we were headed and started laughing.
The professor is marveling over how there's no guns or war toys, only dolls. And then there's a mob of women who starts looming with cascading howls that crescendo and then descend upon our heroes with
violently.
And they're mobbed with smiles on their faces. And then a cop says into her walkie-talkie, "Escaped breeders need backup."
And I think it was that it was like, it's so over the top that I was like, I don't have the energy to like have angsty feelings about this. Escaped breeders. I gotta say,
as a man, I wouldn't be able to write any other kind of intro. Like, I don't, it's like how you see like some performances of an actor, and if you're like, if I were to try to do this scene, I would just basically be imitating that actor because that's the only way to do it. I can't think of any other way. That's the way I think of this scene. I'm like, I don't even know how else I would rewrite the scene as a man, because this is clearly what would happen. A bunch of like young women would descend upon me, because that's what happens.
Yeah. Potential episode title: why would you as a man, and then just leave it there. I will say that the only one of the only things that I allowed to actually truly annoy me in the episode, I was like, oh, come on, we'd have better toys than tea parties. I'm a woman. I don't love a tea party. I could never sit still really at a tea party, but there was some gay, like, recognizable character that the professor called out that was like at a tea party. And I was like, oh, come on. At least we'd be at the mall or something. I don't know. No. Because when, I don't know if you know this, Aaron, but women be shopping. I'm the worst. I'm sorry, y'all. But yeah, no, they're the fellas are taken down. Peril, danger.
And then they wind up at the police station. And just in case the message is not sent home hard enough, all of the wanted posters are all women. Shout out to the prop department of Sliders, by the way.
Firing on all cylinders, all bangers all the time, every week, nonstop.
And Kristen, here's a question I have for you. When this happened, I was like, I don't know how to feel about this. So the professor is sitting in this world, and he isn't bothered that women are everywhere and running the world. And he even says, gentlemen, we made a slide to heaven. So, Kristen, is this character development or amnesia?
It's amnesia. It's we're simply pretending that the other episode did not exist. He did not find. Well, OK. I think that actually this is maybe a world without almanacs, because what had triggered him before was the almanac. He got turned after reading that almanac. There was no almanac this time. No almanac, just vibes. So he's feeling good about it. He's happy.
And so,
and Jerry has to point out, guys, we're in handcuffs. Like, I'm skipping ahead, but Jerry's not vibing.
Oh, no. So Jerry, so the lead cop goes to bring him in for questioning with them all together as a group, which the police definitely do. And Jerry says, yes. Don't say anything until we figure out what is going on. I'm like, I'm so
well, he's
glad
on top of it.
Jerry is guiding us through this.
Did you notice the way he was like trying to cover his handcuffs with like his sweatshirt or a coat or something? I thought. Do you think that was like an actor choice that he did that?
In my mind's eye, I'm picturing something, but it might be different than what happened.
As always, it's the little things, though.
And so the lead cop is really trying to bring the frustration. Like, she's trying to like dig to a place that she's never dug to before, you know, with.
She walked so Christopher Maloney could soar in a Law and Order Special Victims Unit.
And she just has like these like shredding one-liners, like, I could drive a truck through your story. And the professor's retort is, well, just accept that we are here. And she's like, and Jerry says something. She's like, hey, kid, want to say something? I didn't say, hey, kid, why don't you go ahead and talk? You know, she's just, it's like this, like I feel like the Ninja Turtles had better banter back and forth than this. But it is
a contender for the MVP of the week. And we had a lot to work with this week.
Oh.
The bit players with both dialogue and no dialogue, everyone is absolutely going for it. And I feel that even if she doesn't end up being the winner, she set the bar. She set the tone. And like, everyone else get on her level. She received this script. She went in and said, I'm going for it, you know?
And if you're confused, if you're still watching the episode Eggheads, she announces this is not a game. And you're immediately shocked back into this world in this episode.
Right. And not a game.
So, and then another cop steps into the room right after our heroes are laughing. And she says, stop it. You're upsetting them. Like, what is this? I don't understand.
Almost like an absurdist stage play. I loved it.
And so then our heroes are whisked away to the Bureau of Repopulation. And so, Kristen, did you have any thoughts about Jerry being like needing to turn his head and cough, being rated grade A status, and having maneuvers in his boxer shorts?
It was honestly so over the top that I was kind of just laughing in disbelief. And it was absolutely the flip side of, like, and to be clear, so many great, great actors on The Handmaid's Tale. I really love Ann Dowd, Yvonne Strahovski. I can't watch that. I like to watch TV to have a good time. There's been some shows that if I watch them, I gotta watch. I honestly have to read like a synopsis beforehand to decide, can I handle it this week? Is there anything I need to look away from? Hello, Game of Thrones. I'm a sensitive soul. I was like shrieking at some parts, tears in my eyes. So I was like, this is truly, we went through it. I went through a portal. I slid and came out on the other side of what if dystopia, but it was so off the wall, I couldn't stop laughing at it. And this was not even the funniest scene. This was like just a regular, like this was a plot development scene. Vegemite to be found. We will get to it. But
oh, the tray is just around the corner.
It's there. Like you feel something is coming and you don't know what it is. And then eventually it does turn out to be Vegemite. But whew. Yeah, okay. Upon reflection, this episode is more fun than I thought. I still think it's buck wild in ways that aren't always fantastic, but it somehow adds up to, like, listen, you got to see it to believe it. Everyone was giving their best. And I mean, Jerry was playing the scene absolutely straight, and his hair. Aaron, how did you feel about his hair in that moment?
His hair made me forget that he turned into his head and coughed. I just saw, like, the way his hair shook, I'm like, oh, he clearly coughed right now.
Every time I see his hair, I actually think about the movie Midsommar. And what I think about his hair is that, yes, I feel held by it. Yes, it feels like home to me. So, Ari Aster, get on that. We're going to have to delete so much that I say this week. But yeah, he's assessed and he's given top marks. Jerry crushing it on all levels across the universe.
So Jerry asks if he's a prisoner and is informed that no, think of yourself as a patriot instead.
Which, what?
And so we are whisked away from there to the professor looking at a wall of Breeders of the Month. And who is dominating the leaderboard but none other than Trevor Grant? Do you remember who this guy is from a previous episode, Kristen?
Was he in Eggheads?
He was Wilson the Hare from Eggheads. The guy that, yes, like, where they said Wilson so many, like, more times than the movie Castaway. But
incredible.
Like, those are the only two episodes that he's in. Again, they build up these, like, it would have been like, it felt like they could have done Benish in like all of those things. Like they didn't need to introduce this other guy just for two episodes. My gosh. Like,
Is Benish not here and somehow inexplicably, like, just, I don't know. Benish, I mean, and this is a criticism of the series. Unfortunately, it does move forward. I'm always going to watch it and say, could have used more Benish or even some Benish. Could have used Benish, truly.
Put that on a t-shirt. Could have used Benish. I love it. Mm-hmm. And then the professor is unhappy with a protein drink that was given to him. And so he officially has no more nurse fantasies. So
he's completely fine with the world, Aaron. So, remember how he acted the whole time in The Weaker Sex? He's fine with this, but he doesn't like the texture of his protein beverage.
I know. Little did they know that his Achilles heel is an ill-tasting protein drink. That's all it takes to torpedo him. They go to take a spa because that's what you do. And they meet a buddy who needs quote-unquote extra manpower to get out of the facility. I still don't even understand what that means.
Right. Like, I understand that you're making an innuendo, but I don't know if you had a clearer idea of what innuendo you were going for. But at the same time, this actor's like, you know what? Put me in, coach. I'm up to the challenge.
Yeah, it was an organic simile that, like, didn't go anywhere. So then they have the great escape in the woods where they're running. And to distract them, a woman runs into the through the front gate when it opens, and eight cops descend on her at once, which apparently that's all the cops that they have in the facility. And so the professor is able to seamlessly vault over the wall, and Rembrandt struggles with two heroes holding on to him.
Yeah. Well, and just as we're about 20 minutes into this recording session, not counting our intro, this is happening like 20 minutes into the episode. I'm either sorry or not at all sorry to say. I got to think about it. I thought of The Great Escape and how, okay, I'm not going to really spoil The Great Escape, 1960, whatever. I will tell you that it involves an escape attempt, and that happens kind of toward the end of the thing. We're halfway through the episode, and I'm like, what do you mean they're not getting caught and immediately thrown back? The episode's only half over. Where are we going from here? Oh, the places we'll go.
So the places we go, our heroes are split up. Wade is at the hotel, and then our heroes make it to the hideout house. So in the hotel, Wade gets a rad exposition dump, like a solid exposition dump. What turns out to be an Australian double agent, and then gets a phone call at the hotel immediately saying, I don't know how my friends are going to contact me. Then a half second later, gets a phone call, and with a cop lurking in the corner pretending to read a newspaper. I love a lurking cop in a lobby where there's no one else.
And it was MVP material based on the pretending to read a newspaper alone. This was great stuff. Yeah, no, and this was the thing. I think that, like, and again, like, I can look back on shows I really like Full House. Okay, the fact that I almost said X-Files and then accidentally said Full House instead, like, the pandemic affected us all.
These shows are all sliding together.
This is the difference between this season, I think, and the previous season. In episodes where I was like, I'm kind of not sure. This is a little uncomfy, the subject matter, whatever you were going for. The absurdity level of this is so high that it was just so much easier to choose. Like, I'm just vibing. I'm sliding. I'm along for the rides. Let me rewind it back several times to just gaze upon this blatant pretending to read a newspaper. No one's doing it like her.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So whenever this show does have problematic material, the thing is, it's kind of like, I don't know, have you ever had like someone in your life that said problematic things, but I don't know, there's just something about them that you're just like, okay, you know what, that is problematic, but I mean, whatever, bro. Like, you're not in the category of like things that will change people's minds. You know what I mean?
There's something about the gleeful unhingedness of the season so far that makes it so much easier to just be swept along by sliders. I was thinking for other words, descriptors, but I don't have them. All I have is sliders, or should I say sliders, because they won't do that for us. They're not doing the whispering, and I do miss it. We got to say that. I know.
It's like, because I don't remember how many episodes I saw back in the day when it was on. But whenever I whenever someone mentioned the show Sliders, I thought, Sliders. And yeah. I'm like, it's kind of like, I never watched the show, but like Three's Company, like everyone just assumes Farrah Fawcett was she was only on the first season, right? But it's kind of like that.
Yeah. It's actually exactly like that. It is the same thing. I love it.
Farrah Fawcett is Sliders.
Yes. And Farrah Fawcett should be on this show. Everyone.
That would be, yes. That would make a difference.
She could be very chaotic on this show.
So our heroes at the hideout house. Their buddy's wife broke them out.
And he mentioned a wife and sister. Yeah, they had a plot.
Yeah, so apparently the sister was the sacrificial lamb that eight cops descended on, and we never hear from again.
And I wondered. I was like, is she okay?
I don't know. So the wife says that It's immoral. People say it's immoral to want a monogamous relationship. And she's, and then she has the great line of, they can't understand the idea with you and thousands of beautiful other women is painful to me.
Okay. No, again, further examples of how can I be mad when this dialogue is giving me so much?
It is a net positive. I do agree.
And we're getting close to the moment where the line of the episode is said, but we're not there yet, I don't think.
So then they're watching TV, and then there is a host named Dijon who's showing how to do a Chia Man. So this is one of those That's So 90s moments where instead of a Chia Pet, it's a Chia Man. And they have variants of TV shows like Sisters, The Outlaw Years, and Hanging with Mrs. Cooper. And
well, and okay, the innuendos of the Chia Man, I was like, my goodness, look at you, 90s TV, which I let me kind of, we're a family show, let me talk around it, but it's like 90, there are some 90s moments that exist in this, it's like, you would get some very, like, I don't want to say puritanical vibes, but it's like, the humor was just so different that the things you could joke about that were more, you know, maybe adult, like you would joke about them in a very different way, I think. But occasionally some dialogue or scenes or humor or whatever makes it through that you're like, really? Just on the primetime TV? I don't know. It just was very, I would say crass, except that I wasn't offended by it, but I was just cracking up that I was like, this was really the dialogue on the show. And then also, do we get SNL's iconic brownie husband if we don't get Slider's Chia Man? Sit with that.
And so then Jerry opens up the fridge and helps himself straight from getting some OJ without a lid. Mm-hmm. And
why no lid?
And so then Wade reunites with our heroes and pranks them that she doesn't have the timer. And then the cops.
What a card, that Wade. Yeah. Wait, so has that other guy said that he just got off the internet yet in this scene? Or
I did not. Kristen, why don't you? I didn't write that down in my notes. So go for it.
So while I loved the previous episode more overall, like just nonstop great content. You also know from my reaction and absolute refusal to let go of last season's Is Your Computer on the Internet that what I love is a somewhat clunky line about how the internet works. And this man comes in the room and says, I just got off the internet with our friends from the South. And I love it because this is the 90s. It's like you presumably were not Skyping, Zooming. I don't know if you were AOL chatting. What were you doing that you were in community on the internet? But, you know, I just got off the internet is people. I mean, it's nothing I'd want for myself. I'm extremely online. It is something I'd want for myself. I need help, y'all. But no, I just got off the internet. Like, it just was so. I don't know. Just, and he delivered it well. And so he gave kind of like a regular person performance for most of the episode. So I wouldn't really say that he's in contention for MVP, but that line brought me very great joy and I ran it back several times. So, you know, let us, we want you to be on the internet to engage with the show, but you know, if you ever get off the internet, check back in with us and let us know how that went for you.
So then the cops descend on the house and they have like an underground railroad like closet to hide out, to throw them in. And then the cops are just about to leave and dun, dun, dun. Kristen, why do the cops realize that our heroes are still in the house?
Well, Aaron, it's a lot like the scene in spoilers for Sleeping with the Enemy it's not a good film, but Julia Roberts realizes that like her murder husband is in the home. He has found her because the towels have been straightened. They are lined up perfectly. He's OCD and like murdery, whatever. That's not what happens here, but it was the same energy as the slow pan to the interior of the bathroom where the door is open. Something is not right with the seat. They know.
A man has used the toilet seat. It is up. Dun, dun, dun.
So
it just, it, the ominousness with which the camera displayed this and the knowing look on the cop's face, I was like, what? Where are we?
Yeah, it was like, it was kind of played for laughs, but I wasn't sure. I'm like, is this a joke or not? I don't know. So our heroes go up to the roof. They're running around. They go to the road, and then a white van with a DMV beret, army people jump out, with tranquilizer darts, tag our heroes, and Jerry gets half drugged and somehow stumbles away and ends up in a random car. So, Kristen, did you have any thoughts on that whole action sequence?
So, yeah, just a real lot of commotion there about the dramatic yet humorous reveal of the toilet seat that is amiss.
The smoking toilet seat.
Yeah.
That might be the episode title.
It's so much to work with.
So then Jerry wakes up in some sweet new digs.
Mm-hmm.
It's a serene new day. He's centered in front of some large bay windows with a waterfall cascading down, and he's brought food in bed by Wade's stunt double, who proceeds to give him an exposition dump / Truman Show infomercial about how her stores are now in over 150 different locations. And so is she like, when she's talking to him, when, what I wasn't sure about is she like trying to convince him to be another customer? Is it like me when someone asks me if I have any hobbies and I say, well, how would you like to be between 2 and 2 million other listeners? And she responds with, if I want to be taken advantage of, that's my business. And yeah. And then he ends up getting sweet talked into potentially fathering a baby.
Much sure if it to happens. Consider. Much to think about. And okay, I did. There's a lot I've talked about, a lot we can potentially like cut out because no one needs my hot takes on every single thing that's aged badly. I thought it was absolutely wild that she was like, what she was bemoaning was, imagine, you know, facing life without a child to have no one to love or who loves me. And I actually only mention that because there is such a pervasive thinking that like, I was like, man, I know it's just sliders, but that is a bad reason to have a kid. Like, lady, it's called finding community with people you're not biologically related to. I was like, I'm so sorry. You can love people that you didn't, that you have no DNA in common with. I would love for you to find things that spark joy. I just, you know, of all the things in the episode, that was the one that the most made me go like, whoa, 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 wait.
Interesting.
I don't know. But she, yeah, not one of the more off the wall acting performances in the episode. But yeah, she was really trying to get Jerry to father the child. And also, I mean, I think the professor is about to clarify that in this world, oh, there is no method of procuring children other than the old-fashioned copulation way. And I'm like, really? Because I know that sperm banks existed in our world at this time. Am I correct in thinking, like, at no time in the episode do they acknowledge real technology that would allow, like, It's very odd. It's very odd.
Yeah, well, they said while they were in the repopulation center that there was no technology that, so.
Which, how long ago within the episode had the, like, thing that killed all the men happened? How long had...
They were vague on when that happened. Like, there was no timeline given.
I don't really want to get on the internet and, like, research, like, how long sperm banks have been in existence.
They were around then.
Sliders that I've already watched and recorded a podcast on. But yeah, that was my thinking. I was like, I am sure that it had been around before this. But anyways, they don't have that in this world.
And so our heroes try to coalesce at the Australian consulate with our professor, who gets put himself in a precarious situation. Kristen, did you do you want to do the play-by-play with the professor?
I don't think that I can do a play-by-play because my soul had left my body at this point. there's a lot here that would be... There was so much. I was really focused on the Vegemite.
All I have is the professor in a room with two nouns. The first noun is a tray with Vegemite, and the other noun is a lady soldier.
Yeah. So, I don't know. This one lady with quite an Australian accent is just, you know, telling him how it's going to be dystopian, but whatever. He's going to slide. They're all over the place. She leaves. There's Vegemite there to a... you know, get him ready. And then the saxophone music or whatever that starts playing as this female guard begins this. It's weird as a woman to accidentally say the word female because it's no one's favorite word. But this lady guard, the music that plays as she begins to unbutton her uniform is just, what are we doing? What's happening? Off the rails, absolutely off the rails.
Yes, and Rembrandt wears heels and a dress to sneak into to defect to the Australian consulate. There's a lot of problematic things going on. Controversy noted. Did we want to go into that anymore? Or
no, just once again, some terms that you would not use now. And then another joke about the professor's physique, which it's like, dude, let's not. But suffice it to say that Wade's plan does not. Well, Wade has a plan. Wade is making plans this episode and really wearing some pretty good looks as far as Wade fashions go. There was a sparkly crop top sweater sort of thing over like a long sleeve favorite tee that I didn't really understand it, but I did find myself appreciating it. Yeah, for someone, she ended up moving and shaking quite a lot in this episode, but she did not have a lot of screen time.
One of the cops has the great line of, "Listen, you little twit." Like, I love like Ninja Turtle insults. I absolutely love
it. Oh, yeah.
It.
Got heated. These business ladies are mad at her because she's creating problems.
And then so Slade both negotiates from handcuffs and also ends up in the back of an unmarked vehicle and talking to other women, negotiating what should happen. But in all of this negotiating, nothing passes the Bechdel test. Fun fact.
Things that you noticed that I did not notice.
there's
this whole tension between like us, like there's embassies and people are wanting to get like high quality sperm donors from like other nations. It's a whole thing.
So Slade gets our heroes to all coalesce. They have like a deal to swap breeders at underneath a bridge. And what I didn't understand, both sides were like, why under the bridge? And I wondered that also. And they never answered that.
Well,
did I miss something?
Only she knows. Only she understands.
The true puppet master. So then they all end up jumping in a van and driving away. and Jerry emerges from behind a hedge and truly puts the J in J. Crew. But what I didn't understand about Jerry is, how did he know to be there? Like, I was like, did I miss how they coordinated that?
I'm gonna... No plan, just vibes. It just applies to so much.
No plans, just vibes.
No communication, just vibes. No cohesion for the script, just vibes. The episode, truly, just vibes. Just vibes and every single bit player going for it. I mean...
So, I'll tell you what's vibing is the last shot of the episode.
Oh, my.
Do you want to unpack that for us, Kristen?
I've talked a lot. I'd like to hear your... I just was like, this is really...
So, this is what I wrote in my notes.
It was cinema.
A picture of Jerry by a crackling fire. Image for the ages. That's all I wrote. So it implies that there will be a little Jerry in this world. So our world is not the only world to have a little Jerry. So
it was the way she gazed at it, and like the music, and indeed the crackling fire, just the whole setup. It did surpass the dramatic wine glass dropping for me. In terms of a but wow, what a moment episode ending.
But wow, that's great.
They really played it like she almost felt like she kind of fell in love with him based on absolutely zero, again, no true connection, just vibes. But she, you know, she was going through something, she wanted a kid, and I was like, it can't be my imagination that they left this pretty up to interpretation. He was like, I have some concerns about this. Let me voice them to you now. He did that. But I don't know. That ending would indicate that, yeah, Jerry Prime across the universe. And nice. That was the episode.
That does it with my notes. Anything else did we overlook of season 2, episode 2?
My note here that says MVP is the Vegemite lady, I guess, doesn't really convey the level of enthusiasm that I felt.
I would say the Vegemite tray over the Vegemite lady.
Yeah. Have you ever eaten Vegemite?
No. I'm not even entirely sure what it is. I just know it's an Australian thing. That's it.
Yeah. I don't know. I've heard it like is not really a pleasing taste to people who are unaccustomed to it. I missed my opportunity. I missed the window. I missed the chance to slide. There used to be a Cost Plus World Market right across the street from me, and they had it there, and I did not get it. So I suppose I will never know. But yeah, what an episode, Aaron. What an episode.
Nice. So if you have friends on the internet, guess what? We're on the internet also. And we want to be your friends. You can be friends with us on Instagram and Facebook. You can search Three Truths and a Slide. We're on both of those. We're actually on Twitter as well. We haven't posted anything there yet, but we do want to establish a connection with people in the South on Twitter. Yeah, we have our website, 3choosingtheslide.com, that lists all of our social media and everywhere you can listen to the podcast. If you want to listen on one service, rate us, and then listen on to another service and rate us there also, we won't say no to that.
Yeah, and just giving you the opportunity of recommending it to your buddies on any platform that they would like. I mean, not all of them, but we're on quite a few.
And as the pandemic is opening up and you're wondering what you should take from your house with you, take Three Truths and a Slide.
Yeah.
Like, let us slide with you as you reemerged into society.
Commute with it. Walk with it. Listen to it while you file papers at your very boring filing job. I actually hope that that's not the job that anyone else has. It is a job that I had for a couple years when I first moved to Portland, and boy, did I listen to a lot of things during that time. So, and especially recommend this episode not of the show really, but probably of Sliders to friends in Australia, because it is a very good representation of Australia that everybody who lives in Australia will definitely like very much. My sarcasm is bad right now because I too am getting used to, I'm coming out of my cage and I've been doing just fine, but yeah, let's all get on the internet and commune together is what I'm saying.
slide together. All right. Well, that does it for Season 2, Episode 2. Thank you so much for listening to the show. We appreciate it. And we will catch you. Kristen, when can we catch people?
I think it's going to be on the flip slide, Aaron. I really do.
All right. Take care. Bye.